Good evening, everyone. You've tuned in to Paradigm Shifters, and paradigm shifters to me are people who are making a difference in the collective of our species at this time of the Great Shift. This is supposed to be a time where we humans can become almost a different species, having integrity, higher frequencies, and really changing some of the uglier stuff that we're accustomed to on our human level. One of our favorite paradigm shifters, in fact, the first paradigm shifter we ever talked to, is somebody who works consciously with changing the frequencies of the consciousness on our planet. Meet Randy Masters. Hi, Randy.
Hi, Veronica, and everybody out there in Radio Land.
And Randy is a you're a musician, a composer, and a sacred geometric wizard, and an Egyptian kind of guy. You're somebody who knows how to make the energies move in our home, in our workplaces, and on the planet in order to help transform, aren't you?
Yeah, I made up a term for myself. I call it artist in resonance.
That's
I put that
good
on my business card because it's all about the resonating with the field.
Right, and it is. Well, talk about that a little bit.
But any way that you want to resonate with it. I mean, whether you're resonating through sound or resonating through colors or shapes or fragrances or something else. I mean, those four modalities are some of the ones that I work the most with: sound, color, light, fragrances, and shapes. And positioning them in different ways in the home or in an office or in the car, making grids and using crystals and cutting geometric shapes. All of that stuff is playing with fields so that you can resonate better with what you're wanting to resonate with, whatever that is, with yourself and with the rest of the universe, or, you know, something specific that you might build a grid around a picture, a photograph, and make an altar because you want to be in resonance with that place, person, thing, idea. And so I use all of those different modalities, but you know, I started with sound and being a musician and a composer and a music teacher and arranger and all of that, music researcher, and then basically that gave me the basis and the foundation in all that music training and experience to look at things in a resonating, harmonic, musical way. And then I applied that same philosophy in my approach to sacred geometry, looking at all the ratios that I found in sacred geometry as musical ratios. And there's places where they overlap. And that begins to be very interesting to see that our world is about special relationships.
Hmm. Well, sacred geometry, so that's actually a really, I want to say two things here. One is the first time we talked, or maybe it was the second time, you talked about how music in different cultures helped to evolve that culture or move that culture, right?
Right.
And then I'm thinking, as you're talking about shapes, we know that the pyramids over in Egypt, for example, have a transformative effect. But this is all ancient wisdom, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the builders of these sacred temples, whether they're in the shape of a pyramid or another type of a shape, you know, are using the knowledge of resonance, and they're using the shape to create resonant fields. And these sacred sites give off tones. They've measured the tones at lots of different sacred sites. David Elkington wrote a book, In the Name of the Gods. It's about language, and he measured the they measured the frequencies. Scientists have measured frequencies of different sacred sites and found some pretty common tones that were out there that I use these tones in tuning forks as well to have people resonate with the sacred sites. And Alexander Putney wrote a book called Phi, P-H-I, but it just uses the symbol, that basically is showing the infrasound that the different sacred sites give off all over the world, which is a 1.45 hertz, which is basically a low G-flat note.
So where do they get that? Like, does it come from the Earth itself, or does it come from their shapes?
They measure
their
the Earth with some equipment that can measure these low frequencies that are beaming out from these sacred sites, and all these sacred sites link up and talk to each other with this extremely low infrasound. Whales talk down in that low register. Well, they're down in delta and low theta, and elephants do too. And the sacred sites, from what he's showing, give off these patterns and how they overlap all over the world you know, there's pyramids underwater and in the jungles and in mountains and places, and some of them that look like hills, and they've been analyzed, and there's a pyramid, and it's just that there's dirt over the top of it, and it looks like a mound. But inside it is a whole pyramid, like the ones they're finding over in Bosnia that are even larger than the Great Pyramid, and supposedly, from some people's thinking, were even built before the Great Pyramid.
Who built them?
I don't know for sure.
That's the mystery question, isn't it?
I haven't looked as deeply into those. I've just a little bit here and there.
But it sounds to me sort of like acupuncture points. These are really major points on the planet that can actually generate what you called the grids.
Yes.
And that can heal the planet. That can...
And protect the planet. Mm-hmm. And supposedly, you know, the Great Pyramid will light up again, according to some. And there's a crystal going off out on the Giza Plateau that's pulsing. And there's a chamber that's not a publicly known chamber that's inside that chamber. It's pulsing. People have remote viewed it. And they even saw Tahuti or Toth in that room. And it was pulsing at the same rate as this crystal that was in this case about 25 feet underground out on the Giza Plateau.
Wow.
And the theory, or let's say the talk about that, I don't know if it's theory, is that coming up soon, the pyramid will turn on again at a greater rate and link up other pyramids all over the world, and it will create a protective sheath around the Earth that will help the Earth moving through the next phase in the photon belt or the next place through the galaxy that we're moving, and that the whole pyramid climb complex is to create a protective sheath sound, or however it's going to work, with light, basically, I think, activated by sound and other things, out of light to protect the Earth, and that they also use the pyramids to protect the Earth from asteroids and meteors and other things in the past. So that all these pyramids built all over the world, thousands and thousands of them, more than people realize, underwater and in mountains, and some have been sunk, and under jungles covered with vines that you can't see it when you fly over it, but you could fly over it with infrared scanning equipment and actually be able to see these structures down in the jungles.
Wow.
It's huge. And so the ancients had a plan, and the way I understand it is it's sort of like Field of Dreams, build the park and they will come. So they built the field to allow for evolution of species, but the grid had to precede the evolution. It didn't just happen at a certain rate because of amino acids and a few proteins and this and that that were developing from lightning striking the water and turning on these creative processes. It had to have some type of a geometric grid that held the higher consciousness field that we have been developing and evolving in.
So is consciousness a resonant grid?
Yes, but preceding that preceding a certain amount of our development here on this planet with that consciousness is this geometric grid that sustains a higher dimensional field that parents us or acts as a big light womb surrounding us so that we can develop a particular way. So in other words, what I understand is the grid has to precede certain kinds of development.
Well, it seems to me that if we're an experimental species, I don't know, but that's what some people believe, and that is that grid developed so that we can have kind of guidelines to our evolution? Is that it?
Yeah, and that we will progress along certain kind of definitely guidelines and with higher guidances. And
so how are we doing?
Angelic beings and things like that are all part of the harmonics of the grid. They're all resonant characters in our evolving play that we're all in.
Wow, I like that.
So I look at our body as a temple, and that's part of what the tuning is to keep ourselves as a body, as a microcosm within this bigger field, tuned up, and using all these different modalities as ways to stay tuned, to be proactive, so that we can kind of move forward into the reality and be glad that we're living and happy to be moving forward rather than being reluctant light workers and reluctant warriors. You know, they're maybe leaning so far backwards that we would fall over on our mission, on our path, you
yeah.
know.
So let's help people at home who might say, okay, I want to participate in this more consciously. How can I get started, Randy?
Well, I've thought of mentioning a number of techniques, some with sound and some with visualizations that everybody can do, knowing that there's a lot of people out there that don't have tuning forks or other properly tuned musical instruments.
What are tuning forks?
Pardon me?
What are tuning forks?
Well, basically, most of them are made of metal, aluminum, or steel, are different alloys that are different shapes. And according to the length and dimensions of this, when you strike it, it'll give off a certain note, and they can be tuned. And some of them, most of them have two tines on it, so it's a type of a fork. And these are things that existed in the ancient times. You'll see tuning forks on the bottom of some of the ancient Egyptian staffs, these rods that they were holding, that I've said before, antimatter and matter rods, like the rod that Moses had, for instance. And there's a big tuning fork on the end that they would use to basically excite the rod and run a standing wave through the rod. And then, like frets on a guitar, they had these rings that would slide up and down on the rod that you could tune these rings and therefore be like moving the frets on a guitar to a different place so you can get a different pitch. And they would tune the rod. And they knew how to tune these rods and how to send this energy so that they could either create something or take something apart with the energy. So it could be also used as a weapon as well.
Oh, wow. Really?
These ancient Egyptian rods, you know, were things. You know, supposedly Moses, who was a master of using that rod more than the other pharaohs in his day, was able to part the Red Sea doing it. So there's a way that they command the particles of creation with these rods, and also that they could tap into the with the rods, they could tap into the Ark of the Covenant energy. In other words, more like unified field energies, whether you want to call them zero-point energies or hyper-dimensional energies or energies of creation that are, you know, the kind of energies at a high plane back the creation that we see.
So they can get you to shift dimensions. You can work through dimensions with them.
Exactly.
Wow. So
you could sit on the Ark of the Covenant in between these two like angel sculptures, and it would create an arc, like an electrical arc. And then the person trained to sit on this top was called the mercy seat. When they would sit there, they would go into a certain brainwave, and it would help them communicate with higher beings. So they became like a channel, a conduit. But they would sit on this device and sit in this field, and this field would be like a super radio. When the being who is the conduit would like be plugged into the radio station to talk to the angelic or other higher dimensions, and they could talk to people and bring information back.
Wow.
So, you know, I'm looking at components of that with tuning forks, because that's something you can carry around and, you know, inexpensive enough to use. And so I've been working with people, teaching them how to tune their energy fields for years and years and years with all kinds of tuning forks. And
so if you tune your energy fields, can you be like those beings on top of the Ark, being able to resonate with higher dimensions?
Well,
is that what I understood?
They certainly, if our energy fields and chakra fields and minor and major chakras are all talking to each other right and are in harmony, it'd be like each one of us is like a fine musical group, and each of the chakras is one of the different musicians. And these chakras need to play together well, and they need to also listen to each other. And they need to be able to help each other. If one of them gets a little bit of an overload, the other chakras need to step up to the plate and help out.
That sounds like Congress, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, they have a bit to work on. I think they have some issues.
A different kind of resonance. Anyway, so that's great. So can you help us do some chakra work?
So here's some techniques. I'll start with a few techniques that don't use sound, so that anybody out there can do something immediately and learn to do something that can be very profound.
Wonderful.
The first technique that I would say is learning how to work with blue light. And when you look in an electron microscope at the nucleus of the cells of all living matter, plants, animals, birds, reptiles, everything, humans, the nucleus of the cells is this electric blue-white glowing light. And I believe that that's the divine particles that creation is made out of. And I also believe that they may be even the same as the adamantine particles that Glenda Green and Yeshua was speaking about in Love Without End. There's a whole chapter about these adamantine particles, the smallest particles of creation that everything is made from. And I believe it's related. But at least I would say that this blue light are the divine particles. What the ancient mystery schools talked about, they called them blue apples. And there's a wonderful video on that by William Henry titled Blue Apples, where he gets into the mysteries about that. So in order to make use of this, there's a breathing technique that you can do that will activate the blue energy in, like, these little pilot lights in the cells of the person doing the breathing. Now, once you get that activated and you have a big charge of this light, you can then touch other beings. Like, I've had birds fly into a plate glass window, and, you know, if they weren't helped, they might not survive, and I've been able to work with the birds and send this energy into them and bring them back most of the time.
You do that with forks, tuning forks?
You can do things with the tuning forks as well.
Okay.
But this particular technique is just conducting light. So what you do, I learned this from Bob Rasmussen, who was a personal friend and mentor for 25 years. He created a type of healing called Regenesis. And there's a few practitioners around in the world who do it. And he died the day after 9/11, so he was 81 years old. But he was a remarkable being. And he provided a full light body experience for me one time with this energy. He put so much of it into me. I had a complete, total, full light body experience where I merged with this blue light.
Wonderful.
And then I went on later and studied the techniques with him. And he'd work on me a lot as a body worker. So I progressed spiritually and in my health with challenges I had by having this happen. So it's equivalent to when your car battery runs down and you call the service truck, comes along and puts the jumper cables on your battery and recharges your battery.
Oh.
Well, if the individual can get a big enough charge of this blue light energy running, then they can use their hands and touch different points on another person or animal or whatever, and you use your thumb, your forefinger, and your middle finger as a mudra. Those three fingers, the pads touch each other. You see this position in meditation a lot. So the thumb touches the first finger, and both the thumb and the first finger touch the middle finger, and those three together is called this tripod position.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how generally when you touch something else, because those are different circuits. The different circuits come through each finger related to different aspects of consciousness and energies and so on. Now, in order to run this energy, you breathe in through your nose, and you have to find a pace that works for you. You breathe in through your nose to the count of five,
mm-hmm.
and then immediately you breathe out through your mouth to the count of 30. But you purse your lips a little bit like you're going to whistle, and that creates resistance. So when you exhale, or breathing out through your mouth and exhaling, by pursing your lips, you're creating a little bit of resistance like you're going to play a flute or you're going to whistle.
Mm-hmm.
And that will allow you to control the charge of the energy, and it also helps you don't hyperventilate, and it's easy to do a 30 count exhale. And now each person has to find a tempo that works for them. It can be really fast, like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and then you breathe out to 30, or it could be slower. And having been a trumpet player, I did a lot of breath control things, so I can breathe really, really slowly and out for a really long time. A lot of wind musicians can do that, singers too. But if you don't have that type of training or other deeper breath work, if you find it challenging, just speed up the pace. And now, when you were first learning to do this, you visualize your feet turning and moving up your body like these electric blue-white particles starting at your feet, and they're moving up your body until your whole body looks like you're beaming up on Star Trek. But instead of kind of a gold white light, it's electric blue white, cobalt blue white, with this very powerful spiritual white light that almost becomes a little bit silvery sometimes. And you'll visualize that moving up through your body. So when you do the visualization and you're doing the breathing, it connects in your brain a particular way. After a period of breathing like this, these pilot lights in your cells can light up. And what can happen, and you can just touch your body in different places where you may have a challenge and use that tripod position and do this, keep doing this breathing, and with each hand touch the body in different points that you're directed to do. And you can do this spontaneously and actually intuitively without having all the course training, which teaches you specific points like acupuncture points are and other points. But you can do this spontaneously.
Okay.
And balance yourself from aches and pains and bites and sunburns and, stomach aches and headaches and all this stuff. And potentially, as you work with this technique, you can heal things on the mental, emotional, physical, or spiritual level, or any four of those levels all at once. Mental, emotional, spiritual, and physical can all be up-leveled and improved or reharmonized using this light.
That sounds wonderful. I can hardly wait to try it.
Oh, I consider this, one of the main techniques in Life 101 that we should all be trained in from the time we're little kids. Kids could fall down on the playground or out in the street and just run this light on themselves or each other and, immediately reset the electron patterns that get messed up with injuries. Hit your finger with a hammer, and the electron flow creates kind of a traffic jam, and that's why it'll bruise. And because the healing energies can't flow right because they've been disturbed by the hammer blow. But if you do this breathing and send this kind of energy, there's a good chance that you can straighten that out. They've also had people repair broken bones on the spot using this energy.
Well, that's good news, too.
So as a disclaimer, I don't know what any individual will or won't do because it also depends upon a number of factors in their consciousness of whether they even want it to happen, are willing for it to happen, can believe it can happen, and a number of things. And, how long they breathe and how long they do it given, and how soon after an injury or something that you address. But I've used this technique, and I use it for music. Creatively, one of Bob's students who was getting her master's degree, and she's a medical student, she got this energy going and wrote her whole thesis as you would a rough draft, but it was the final product. She didn't have to change the spelling, the punctuation, anything. She was in such a flow state that she was able to do the final version of her thesis right out of the gate.
Wonderful.
And when he told me that, I said, "As for me, I have to learn to do that." So I started working with this back in the 1970s when I met with him and I was teaching music at the university. And I started doing this breathing before I would go to concerts to play music. And it helped me perform and create a much bigger energy field in my own performances. Now, when I'm at the performance, I was not doing the breathing because obviously I have to breathe according to the needs of the music. But I would do this as a warm-up or on my way to the concert, I'd be breathing. I don't do the visualization when I'm driving in a car or anything, but I can do the breathing just about any place. And then when I'm in a safe place, where I can relax, I do the visualization. It had a huge impact on my ability to project in concerts and create an energy field that was large enough to, at times, bring the other musicians up to a higher place because of the field that I was generating. And I became more and more conscious of doing that. And it also helped me with trumpet playing because I was able to be a very high note trumpet player without having to practice a lot. I used this energy instead. And the reason I didn't want to practice a lot is because I was busy doing all this research and sound and pyramids and things, and it was in writing music, and all that stuff took a lot of time. So I found a higher energy pathway for playing music, similar like to doing martial arts, to where it's effortless because of the kind of consciousness that you're running. So that's the number one technique I would offer everybody. So you breathe in through your nose to the count of five, immediately out through your mouth to the count of 30, and you keep the same pace. Once you find a pace that's working for you, you just keep that rhythm. You purse your lips when you exhale, and then, to get it going, you do this visualization. You see these electric blue-white particles starting at your feet until your whole body looks to you, in your mind's eye at least, like you're beaming up. Somebody looking at you might not see your body going through any changes, but when you close your eyes and see your own body in your mind's eye, it looks like you're beaming up on Star Trek.
Wonderful. But
yeah,
we do a wild
it's heavy
ride.
Duty. And I see, now with sound, when I was laying in the sarcophagus of the King's Chamber a couple of years ago in Egypt, we led a tour there, I was chanting for about 20 minutes the note that made the whole room resonate. And then I looked at the ceiling, and this electric blue-white light was forming on the ceiling in the King's Chamber.
Oh.
With my eyes open, not a third eye clairvoyant thing. I mean, my eyes are open. I'm looking at the ceiling, and here's this electric blue-white light. And then all the electricity in the pyramids went out.
Oh,
the Egyptians didn't know what had happened. And it came back on. It didn't create a problem. But I found that to be quite interesting, as a matter of fact. So I activated it with the sound, and you probably have to have different notes, each person, but that particular room resonates to particular frequencies, 125 hertz, somewhere between 121, 121.5, and 125. And the sarcophagus also resonates to 117 plus, and I use 117.1875 with the 125. And in other words, if you're laying in the sarcophagus as a resonant cavity and you sing the right note, there's a certain note that that cavity produces. It's like the body of a guitar. It's a resonant cavity. And then that resonant cavity is activating with the room. And the two together, the difference between the two frequencies of the cavity and the sarcophagus in the room produces the Schumann resonance of 7.8, et cetera, hertz, depending on, you know, what's happening and which notes you're using, but at least 7.8. So I think that's one of the ways that they had people and the pyramid connect in with the Earth Schumann resonance.
But wasn't the sarcophagus where they went to transform, to transcend?
Well, exactly. And so when I saw that blue light coming out of the sound, I felt like that's part of that ascension experience. They were able to send people into higher dimensions of experiences in that sarcophagus. And the way that interacted with the room, interacts with sound, the whole pyramid is susceptible to sound in different ways, as are lots of other Egyptian sites. And so when we go there, we tone in these rooms and make sounds until we can find the resonance of a room, like singing in the shower, and you find a certain note. And with very little effort, the whole room fills up and you sound great, you know.
And so they knew how to build the shapes, so that could create the energy flow, so the resonance would go that way. Is that right?
Yeah, so the temples are built with, the ancient principle was form follows sound.
Oh, okay.
So in the beginning was the word. It's the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Form follows sound. Sound, you sound the temple into existence. So I believe that's a big key with all of the temples around the world that are built properly with the ancient wisdom of the universe, is that they're built with this sound in mind. And supposedly, you could make sounds that would light the temples up. And I was told that by Kevin Ryerson. He channels this being named Antun Ray, who was an ancient Egyptian master. And I had a channeling before one of my last trips to Egypt, and we talked about this stuff. And when that blue light formed on the ceiling as a result of my making the sound, I thought that was a very good demonstration of beginning to light something up.
And you did say earlier that there's this crystal that someone had seen through remote viewing, and that they're saying that the major pyramids are going to light up. What does that mean? Does that mean they're just going to vibrate at a higher level? They're actually going to be filled with light?
By one level, they could vibrate at a higher level, and we might not see the light. But at some point, they could perhaps even vibrate to the point where they glow. And that's what I'm suspecting. Eventually, they will vibrate such that they will actually be producing light out of.
And that will increase the grid, or improve or make healthier the grid?
Well, if you can imagine it, light coming out of all of these, like Klieg lights, or maybe it's going out in all directions, and pretty soon these light beams start interacting and connecting together like holding hands.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, they link up with that 1.45 hertz down right through the earth, through the layers of the earth. So they're also already connecting up that way. It's just so low that we don't see light from that.
Well, I keep thinking, and we're always talking about the shift. How's the shift? And I always tell people, well, the shift is happening within ourselves. But my own guidance has said that we could become kind of a new species. And the way you're talking about all this and the resonances and the lighting up of the pyramids all around the world and so on, I'm going, that's kind of a way to jumpstart a great number of people and the Earth, isn't it?
Yeah. And I believe that perhaps a lot of the unknown parts of the brain, unknown to modern science, will turn on from these higher vibratory fields. It will just be, it's like flipping on a switch.
How exciting. So take us back to your tuning forks and let's all get some.
Yeah. So here, you know, one thing that I use for balancing, and I use these in Egypt too, there's three forks here I'm going to play. I don't know if we ever demonstrated these in any of our other talks.
It doesn't matter because it's sure relevant right now.
Yeah. So I'm going to use a 666 tuning fork, which is a code for carbon, 6 neutrons, 6 protons, and 6 electrons. But it's also the solar principle, the male solar principle of creation. It's not the beast. It's not the Antichrist.
I'm glad you mentioned that.
Yeah, that's a whole other thing. But the 666 is actually, when you translate the ancient manuscripts, is actually one of the numbers for Christ. If you multiply a theoretical height of the pyramid of 486 feet with the capstone on it, times the hydrogen constant of 37, hydrogen physical constant, 37 divided by 27. There's 27 blocks on the north wall of the King's Chamber, 37 blocks on the south wall. So that code is built into the number of blocks on the wall. Duh. I mean, they're showing us. Mm-hmm. It has to do with turning light into matter. So if you multiply 486 by 37 over 27, you get 666. And that's what links the six, one of the ways of linking the 666 into the pyramid. Also, when you convert it to light, the 666 converts to a very beautiful color of violet light.
Hmm.
So it produces a note E. Now, so I'm going to play that note with the intent that the listeners, now if you don't have the tuning fork, you can think the number 666, think of it as sound, and remember hearing this. And just recalling the memory, you can create an activation even without the fork. So I'll play this. Let me know
and
if you hear
it. And just a
minute.
The activation is actually a resonant experience in their own little home.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
Just by hearing this, it can trigger something.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to play it a few times.
I'm ready.
See what you get. The second. Hear that okay?
That was a long resonance, yes.
Yeah, that was one strike. Yeah, I just kept going.
It sure did.
And I struck it on a wooden dowel. That's what I struck the fork on. Now, I'm going to play 1080, okay. 1080. 1080 is the number of miles in the average radius of the moon, 1080. And I'm going to play this one. This represents the female energy. The 1 and 8 are numbers for Isis. 8 by itself is Isis is the body of Isis, which doesn't have a reflection. It's sort of an infinity loop. And 18, one of the ancient cubits was 18 inches. 18 is also the active principle of Isis, the 1 being the unity, the God spark going into 8, and 8 also representing the original 8 cells of creation that all matter shares in common before it goes off and becomes a human instead of being a frog or a plant or something.
Hmm.
We all share as a star tetrahedron packed geometry of 8 cells, of the original 8 cells. And of course, 801 backwards, that means the alpha and the omega in Greek. The number 800 is omega and the number 1 is alpha, and 801 is the alpha and the omega, and there's all kinds of sacred geometry. The 108 also represents 108 meridians in the body. So this number is also a lunar number, and it's 1080, and that is a C-sharp note. So I'm going to play that one, and this is the balance, the female principle of creation. The female principle of creation. That means males share this too. Even though they don't have a female outward body, their inner female needs to be active if they really want the whole ascension process to work. Their inner male and female, of both males and females, has to come together as a team and form a unity, which we're going to get to with the next fork after this is the unity. So I'm going to play this 1080. Hear that okay?
I sure could. It feels very different from the last one.
Yeah,
very
and different. I pulsed it a little. I moved it away from the telephone and back.
Mm-hmm.
It was a real low-tech telephone. But anyway, it's still going to come through. The intent, it's going to get through. So I play those. Now, if I played those two together, then it creates a fine, a golden mean ratio, which is a minor sixth interval. In this case, it'll be 1080 divided by 666 is 1.621621621 on into infinity. So I'm going to play the two together because it's now creating a ratio. You have to have two to get the ratio. This, otherwise, they're just playing the single note. But when you play the two together, this is harmonizing the male and the female. And they're not the same size. One note's higher than the other. One fork is a little bigger than the other. It's about what balance in the numerical equation that they have. And when they are in five proportions with each other, that's one of nature's most beautiful harmonies. It's not about being 50-50. It's about 1.618 to 1 or 0.618 to 1. So here we go with that ratio. And if you want to, another technique is you can imagine solar energy coming down through the crown and lunar energy coming in through the third eye and blending in the middle of the head. So you bring the energy from the sun, solar principle too, down through the crown, and then you bring the lunar energy, the lunar principle, in through the third eye. I'll say more about that after we play the two.
I've got it. I'm all prepared to do it.
All right. Hear that?
Yes, I sure
and
do.
And you can hear the first 10 notes from the love theme from the movie Love Story is based on a minor six. C, went like that. And so I was playing that same kind of a thing with these two tuning forks, and I was pulsing them back and forth to suggest that melody a little bit. Now, the ancient mystery schools had a solar path, which was tuned into Ra and Osiris, and then it also had a lunar path, and Thoth or Tahuti was considered a lunar lord. And so there were two different types of areas of the mystery school. So today I think that what's important is we blend the solar principle and the lunar principles together. And through in meditations, that's a good thing for balancing the body. Also, the light we see from the moon is really the sunlight reflected from the moon. So the moon lets us see the sunlight in a different way. So it's intricately connected with the earth and the sun. Mm-hmm. So now, when you add those two together, you get 1746, which is an A note. And that's the number of fusion. There's over 1,700 different sacred meanings for in gematria and the science of alphabets and numbers for the number 1746. This also relates to the mustard seed that you hear about in the story in the Bible. Well, the key number for that, what they call the number of fusion, is 1746. So in the Egyptian mysteries, the 666 representing the male principle is Osiris, and then 1080 is Isis, representing the feminine, and then after they come together, they produce Horus, which is the 1746, which is the child of the divine union, or the divine child. And you hear stories going around about the golden-haired child and things these days. That's a metaphor for the enlightened child that's the product of the divine couple. So here's the 1746. And, you know, you can just feel that as sort of a way of blending the other two together. Okay. And now I'm going to play all three forks together.
Okay.
And it actually creates a Fibonacci series. This Fibonacci series, when you back engineer it down, you subtract 1080 from 1746 and you get 666, and then you subtract those two and you get 414, then 252, 162, then 90, 72, and 18. So it's a Fibonacci series. The first three numbers are 18, followed by 72, followed by 90, which are the three angles in half of a golden triangle. If you make a triangle with the base is equal to 2 and the slope is equal to phi, the golden mean, 1.618, and the whole base is equal to 1, you divide that in half, the base angles where the slope touches the base are 72 degrees, there's a 90-degree angle, and then the half of the apex angle is 18 degrees. So those three angles of a golden triangle produce the series, which breaks down to 1, 4, and 5. You can divide it by 18. So it's a Fibonacci series. Instead of it starting 1, 1, 2, 3, 5, 8, 13, etc., this starts out 1, 4, 5, 9, and continues like that. And so you just multiply it by 18, and you get all of these numbers. And they produce extraordinary geometries in the oscilloscope. We have Judy Cole did an experiment where they played all these numbers into an oscilloscope four at a time and just working with the volumes, and they created astounding geometric shapes out of these notes.
Wow, that's wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tell me this. This is going to be a very plebeian question, but if you're playing these tuning forks, you know, the female and the male and the coming together,
yeah.
I'm like, is there a sense of harmonizing, perhaps dissonance in the home? I mean, this is quite simplistic.
Yeah, that whole intent of playing these two together is to harmonize and have the male and the female honor each other, celebrating each other, complimenting each other, assisting, helping each other, working together. And you can actually take these tuning forks, sound them, and put the stem of the tuning fork on the wall or on the wood trim or on the wall, and especially if there's a stud behind the wall, you know, well, you'd probably use the male fork then, I guess. Huh? But anyway, you know.
I wasn't going to touch that, but you did it.
Yeah. So you put the fork on the wall, and the whole wall can resonate. And I have a number of people tune their offices where they do treatments. Even if they don't do any kind of healing type of work, even if they do whatever, consulting, you can
mediation,
sound the fork.
It would be good for mediation, wouldn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. Mm-hmm. And these are excellent for that.
Mm-hmm.
There's a number of different sacred numbers that you can play that help conflict resolution.
Hmm.
And these are the ones that I'm playing here definitely contribute to that.
Hmm.
So now I'm going to sound all three forks together. How about them apples?
Isn't that wonderful? You know, it's interesting. I'm wondering where the song came from in that love story.
Because Francois Lay wrote it, French composer.
But somebody must know deep in their psyche, in their soul, in their essence, that there's that rapport, huh?
Yeah, and also he's starting out with the minor sixth interval, the C, high C down to E, is a minor sixth interval. And that minor sixth is, you know, depending on the tuning system, 1.6 or so. And that creates the phi ratio. So any aware composer would be aware that the minor sixth and the phi ratio is the musical answer to the Fibonacci ratio. And the golden mean. So that's the golden mean in music as the interval between two notes.
Tell people about the golden mean. What exactly is that to people who have no
any
concept?
Any two things that relate in the ratio of 1 to 1.618 or 0.618 to 1, it's a certain portion. It's just a little bit different than two-thirds. So that particular proportion is found all over the universe from the microscope to the telescope, and it's found all over our body, the phi ratio, and the bodies of all living organisms, insects and plants and fish and everything. When you analyze them and measure all the ratios, like from one joint to the next and from the feet to up to the belly button is in phi ratio, that from the belly button, let's say, up to the top of the head. You know, the feet up to the belly button, that's the larger of the two. So that would represent, let's say, 1.618. And then from the belly button to the top of the head or so, that would represent 1. And so all the different joints and ligaments and the different sizes of the bones are all in these proportions. The planets have rotations that relate to various aspects of the phi ratio, golden mean. So you see this as nature's ideal proportion, that is not a 50-50 ratio. Mm-hmm. So they call it the golden mean. The golden section is the part that you add to a square to make a golden rectangle out of a square. So if you take a square that's 1 by 1 by 1, and you add 0.618 to the square, now you make a rectangle, it's 1.618. 1 plus 0.618. And that's the golden mean, or the phi ratio, PHI. All of that, so golden that section, golden mean, phi ratio, and that's produced by whole numbers. Once you get to the numbers 5 and 8 in the Fibonacci series, all the way the rest of the way up through the Fibonacci series are golden mean ratios of two adjacent numbers. And that's everywhere in the universe.
So if we actually create it in terms of sound or shape or whatever in our lives, that improves the resonance, our resonance of compatibility with all of life?
Yeah, it's the way that we link in to the fractal, that the key mathematical fractal of the living field is the phi ratio. That is the key to it, not a 50-50, because that creates the word balance. And balance is basically static. There's no growth. You can see a teeter-totter perfectly balanced in the middle at a 50-50. It's not going anywhere. There's no motion. Mm-hmm. But 0.618 to 1 or 1.618 to 1 allows you to have a dynamic proportion in the two. That many things in the world work that way. We've done things with blending liquids together and blending seeds, blending things and fertilizers, you might say, for the plants in a ratio of 1.618 to 1 or 8 to 5 ratio. That's a simple way to do it, 8 parts to 5 or 13 parts to 8, like that. Those are simple whole number ways of working with this.
And what
happens? Got tremendous improvement in products.
Wow.
When we applied the phi ratio to, I've been a consultant with a number of different companies because they wanted my harmonic knowledge applied to their products. And when I pointed this out in certain ways, and then they went back and re-engineered their products, the products improved sometimes dramatically.
Well, so what about gardening if I'm going to plant some vegetable seeds?
Well,
you
could have, you know, 8 parts of a line of one vegetable and maybe 5 parts of another, and the two vegetables would be in phi ratio with each other.
And then we plant
especially if you pick vegetables that are complementary, where in alternating seasons, what one breaks down to gives off to the other and makes the other one grow more healthy the next season. And you do that in 5 proportions. If you look in the book Power of Limits by a guy named Doxy, D-O-C-Z-Y, Georgie Doxy, it's all about different things about sacred geometry, and there's this picture of a Japanese garden. It's got boulders and rocks in it, and it's raked. And you see the sacred geometry by which the placement of the rocks and how that garden was laid out. When you look from the sky down at the garden, the whole thing is put together with cross sections and angles all built up on 5 proportions. You know, it's a square in the middle with 2 golden rectangles on the side, creating a total garden area of the square root of 5 long. And then it all divides up into different sections and horizontals and such. And you can do this with string. You can lay out a whole garden with string this way and then place rocks and plants and then take away the string. And everything looks natural, like it was just that found that way in nature. It doesn't look like somebody went out there and metrically measured it. And yet, it puts everything in the garden into harmony with everything else in the garden. It's a way of tuning the garden by where the rocks or the plants or the trees are placed.
Hmm.
I'm very big on geometrically tuning the gardens and placement like that.
Hmm.
It's something, you know, one can do. If you just look at that page in the book and you'll see how it's put together, it's a huge lesson.
What's the name of the book again?
It's called The Power of Limits.
Okay.
It's easy to get in book, too. It's still published. It's very big book in the world of sacred geometry because it shows the golden mean in butterflies and airplanes and insects and horses and humans and temples and pagodas and the whole thing. It's a spectacular book.
Hmm.
He did a great job with these diagrams in the book.
Hmm.
And so if you just study this one of how this Japanese garden was laid out, this is a good thing to do now to create something like this and even a small one in a tray in the home and send beautiful healing energies over to Japan by creating a healing Japanese garden. You can even do one in a tray that you would bake with and put sand in it and make a little sand model of a garden and do all these proportions in it and use that as a geometric prayer for harmony for Japan.
That would be wonderful. That's not that complicated, I guess.
No, it's a very simple thing to do, and you could get it completely by looking at, just copy the way it was done on that page in the book, and it, and just doing it will put you in harmony.
Oh,
and
that's
just,
great.
You know, and you can even, if you want to teach a workshop or something in the house or have a gathering of people, you can even mark out the room, the living room, and put chairs in different proportions, you know, and they may look like the chairs are scattered, but they're all done in these golden mean proportions. You just lay out the room with string and such and place the middle of the chair there. Then when people come and sit, they're sitting in these special proportions. And this is what I recommend in conflict resolution rooms, that the seating arrangements are all done using harmonizing positions of sacred geometry so that everybody sits in harmony with each other.
That makes sense. So it's like feng shui, sort of.
This is harmonic feng shui using mathematics and geometry to tune the room. This is a component. You can do it intuitively, and you might even do it intuitively and measure it later and find out that, you know, you were right on with these things. But you can also consciously set up a room like this. And I would love to see windows and doors using more of these sacred proportions so that when people just look at the mundane things in their home, a mirror, for instance, I had a mirror made in my home that's a golden rectangle. So that it's reflecting back the loving geometry of nature. Every time you just look at the mirror, no matter what content is in the mirror, you are looking in a field that is geometrically tuned.
Gee, Randy, you probably look more handsome in that mirror too, don't you?
Well, I should improve things, you know. you should put your best foot, you put more of your light forward. I mean, I have all of the artwork, most all the artwork in my house has all been tuned. I actually do all the measurements and then take it to the frame shop and tell them what I want. And so that when you just look at the paintings or pictures or photos and how they're framed, the frames are all in special geometric proportions, so that creates harmony just looking at the frame.
Wow.
Even if I take the content of the picture out and just put the frame on the wall, the frames are all sacred proportions.
Wow.
And there's lots of different ones. And Renaissance painters and other painters have used this in their paintings to place objects in the paintings according to sacred geometry, and they would lay down a grid, then they do the painting. And then you don't see the grid, but if you know how to do the grid on the painting and you draw lines on a picture of it, you can analyze the painting. You can see all the sacred geometry that's behind the painting. A lot of the Renaissance paintings were just full of the magic of the mystery schools encoded in the geometries in the paintings.
Do you think that just comes intuitively through the soul of the master?
It can. If they're that in tune, anything can come with it. You don't even have to use a ruler or a measuring device. If you're that in tune, you just say, put it there, you know. But if you don't, then you can use the measuring devices.
Well,
some of the masters use rulers and things, you know, anyway. So.
Okay, well, I'm going to run out of time, which I'm sorry about, but I want you to throw in a little bit about color, if you will, before we're done here.
Okay. Well, of course, I'm suggesting, you know, working with this blue color. One of the things, they've measured the chakras with the unborn child by using some science equipment, and they could see that the chakras were forming from the etheric field in the early development of the fetus, and all the chakras in their proper places were all having the colors associated with them that we have, like a root chakra associated with red, second chakra with orange, solar plexus yellow, heart green, throat blue, third eye area blue-violet, and then the crown violet. And all those colors were showing up as the child was developing. I thought that was excellent.
That is pretty interesting. There's always that question about when the spirit enters the body. Of course, you're not saying spirit, you're saying...
I haven't yet said that the spirit's entered, but whatever is, you know, guiding this growth process is doing it through this rainbow order of colors.
So a person could use chakra sounds and so on to help stabilize or what?
I convert the colors to sounds and the sounds to colors and work back and forth between the two. So you can just visualize these colors with each of the chakras spinning, and they spin in different directions. They don't always spin clockwise or counterclockwise. Chakras are like whirling tornadoes, little cones coming out of the body, and they spin different directions according to the needs. and they even change in size and some other things.
They're very interactive. We have to unfortunately say goodbye, but I want you to tell people how to get hold of you. This has been so exciting and so enlightening, Randy.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me get here.
I've just so enjoyed it, and I hope you'll come back again.
I love doing this, and we need to do one on sacred geometry, because one of your previous listeners of the last show had some fascinating geometry questions, which were beyond the focus for today, but there's a lot of good things there in her questions.
Well, you're taking a group over to Egypt to the beginning of May, so how about we get you on sometime after you come back?
That would be a good time. Yeah, that would be
excellent.
It would
be a perfect time.
And they can call me at 831-662-2594. 831-662-2594, and my website, www.universalsong.net, is my main website, universalsong.net, and they can reach me, and that has my email and other things.
And information about your Egyptian tour?
Yes, there's things there. Actually, on that one, they can look at holographicsound.com, holographicsound.com, Paul Hubbard's website, because we've put all the Egyptian contact information there.
Well, I'm so excited about you going, getting more information, and then coming back and talking to us after you get back.
Yeah, we didn't have time to run through all the chakra tones, but I hope everybody can visualize that. If we need to, we can start out next time and go back and do that.
I think that would be wonderful, and I'm very excited to talk to my neighbor Marilyn and see if we can get out in the backyard and do some of our golden mean vegetable planting.
Yeah, tune your garden, tune the home, you know. Every room can have this attunement by placing things in particular ways. And oh, it's so much fun to do this. You know, it's your home and temple, you know.
Well, thank you so much, Randy, and thank you for listening, everyone. We'll be pulled off stage in a sec, so good night. This is Veronica Entwistle saying, if you'd like to be in touch with me, it's Veronica at veronicaentwistle.com, no H in Entwistle, Veronica at veronicaentwistle.com for feedback on the show with Randy or any of the shows, suggestions for paradigm shifters, or a session with me. Take a deep breath. Take in love from the universe. And breathe it out to one another. Maybe it'll go blue. Good night.